As a small business owner, there's one word that you absolutely dread: payroll. For small businesses, it's a big burden. You may think you're saving time and money doing it yourself, but come on, are you? Timesheets, processing checks, calculating taxes, a total waste of your time. Paychex simplifies payroll processing, saving you time and money. Submit your payroll online, fax it in, or call your dedicated Paychex payroll specialist. And you're done. Learn more at TryPaychex.com. Come on, do the math. The IRS dishes out 8 million penalties a year. Make one mistake and you're on the hook. On average, you're losing nearly one business day every month doing payroll. That's time and money you'll never get back, unless you get Paychex. More than 500,000 small businesses already do. Call 877-649-5324. Trade payroll pressure for peace of mind. Call now. 877-649-5324. That's 877-649-5324.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network, and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. The first look at the legacy of the first African-American president, Barack Obama, etched in stone or ephemeral. We'll speak with a leading presidential historian tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Julian Zelizer is the Malcolm Stevenson Forbes Professor of History and Public Affairs at Princeton, also a political analyst with CNN. In the new book that's just out, The Presidency of Barack Obama, A First Historical Assessment. Welcome, Julian.
Thanks for having me.
Good to talk to you. And we've interviewed Steve Forbes three times. He's a great, classy guy, so I assume he's the son, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Of your chair.
Yes.
All right, first question, why so soon, particularly when President Trump's doing everything he can to dismantle the Obama legacy?
Well, the idea behind the book is just to get a bunch of smart historians to take a first cut at trying to put the presidency into context. Historians who live through a presidency have the advantage of really understanding the feel of the moment, understanding the different players and the connections between different things that are happening. So it's not meant to end the conversation, but it's really meant to launch a dialogue that will probably take place over decades. But I wanted to get that first take by some of the best historians I knew.
All right. I wanted to start off with his own standard, which was, I know he wanted to be a transformational president. He looked at the Reagan model. I remember getting to know Martin Anderson, who was one of Reagan's first close policy advisors. And Obama had called many times, several times, about the ridding the world of nuclear weapons. So obviously that had been a goal of him. But by that standard, you'd have to say he failed, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, he does have a pretty substantial legacy of policy, I think more than people were aware at the time or remember now, particularly on domestic policy. But one of the dynamics that many of the authors in the book capture is he was unable to put together the same kind of long-term political coalition someone like Reagan or FDR did. So the result is that when his presidency ended, many of his policies were extremely vulnerable. And then finally, he didn't have the kind of foreign policy breakthrough that Reagan had with the end of the Cold War. So I think on both fronts, that's why at least now the presidencies look very different.
Do you think part of it is that he didn't have a personality that engaged well with politics and politicians? And, of course, you know, he came in with this, there's not red states, blue states, there's the United States, but he ran headlong into huge gridlock.
I think the second part is probably more relevant,
okay.
Meaning I'm not sure if he had a personality where he just loved the give and take of politics, it would have made a difference, particularly after 2010. I think what he underestimated was the intensity of partisan polarization in our political system and the kind of opposition he was going to face. So one thing you see over and over with Obama is actually an attempt to fulfill that speech from 2004 but finding the political system really wasn't going to sustain that. And that kind of partisan opposition undercut many of his efforts.
Now, if we lower the bar a little bit and more of a comparative standard, he has to look like a class act versus the current chaos in the White House.
Well, that's absolutely true. And simply in terms of how he saw governance and his own ideas of what it meant to be a leader, it's a pretty striking difference with what we have in office today. And I do think sometimes who your successor is determines a little bit how people look back at what you did. And, you know, he was a president who believed policy matter, who believed in a certain level of presidential decorum, and as we said, who believed that it was still worth trying to create bipartisan support, even if the political system showed he wasn't going to do that. And that's very different. We currently have a divider and a polarizer, and that's a contrast with President Obama.
I think also the big double standard, if Obama was carrying the baggage that Trump was, he wouldn't even have been considered seriously. Forget, say, 18 sexual harassment allegations. If he had three wives alone, he would have been disqualified, wouldn't he?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, you can see the kinds of attacks that he sustained were for much smaller things than we see with the current president, and things that were just totally fabricated, like the birther movement,
yeah,
which was a big part of his presidency. So the bar was very high for him to do well. And then it is remarkable looking back at the presidency. There really isn't the same level of scandal. There's almost no major scandal involving his administration.
Now, I thought that on election night, hope and change that he gave in Grant Park in my hometown of Chicago, and then the day one swearing in, he's the first African-American. It's almost like both those events are legacy events, and we're not going to be topped.
That's true. It's hard to get beyond that 2008 election night moment. I think when many people in the country felt that the possibilities not only of the president but for our democracy were as great as ever before. One of the chapters in the book by Peniel Joseph looks at the history of race during the 8 years of his presidency and has a kind of mixed assessment. He looks at Eric Holder at Justice and shows he actually made progress on some of those racial issues that people were thinking about on 2008, including providing more public defense resources to criminal defendants and lowering sentencing on smaller crimes. But at the same time, as we saw, you know, the hope that this meant that we were beyond our racial divisions quickly proved to be untrue. And by the end of his presidency, we were dealing with police shootings and other issues front and center.
Okay, if we talk a little bit about whether it's etched in stone or ephemeral, if you look at that Hippocratic oath in the medical business, do no harm, not having a depression, avoiding that, is a huge accomplishment, but it's kind of under that, you know, trying to say a negative is a great accomplishment.
I think that's true. I think, you know, there's a couple chapters that look at his stimulus package and what he did with the economy, and the authors actually come down pretty well in terms of what the programs did. They were able to get us out of a horrific economic moment that we were in the fall of 2008. But in the end, first, the president didn't really promote a lot of what he did. So even at the time, it was a bit ephemeral. You didn't know what the stimulus package was doing. Most Americans thought their taxes went up, even though the stimulus provided one of the biggest tax cuts for the middle class in a long time. And it's also a negative. It's hard to kind of boast about saving the economy and getting it out of the worst moment and saying things would have been a lot worse had you not had the program, because the economy still had trouble after the recovery, and it was still not satisfying to many people in the country. So that makes it ephemeral, even if the accomplishments were significant.
All right, last couple and a half minutes. What would you say are the biggest accomplishments in stone, biggest ephemeral, and biggest failures?
I think in the Affordable Care Act, with all its flaws and problems, still was a landmark achievement, especially with the expansion of Medicaid in reducing the number of people who didn't have insurance. I think he was able to restore some of America's role overseas after where we were with Iraq and Afghanistan under President George Bush. And finally, saving the economy from a really perilous moment. Even though it's hard to boast about it, will stand as his accomplishment. His biggest failure politically is failing to build a coalition that would outlast him. And when he ended his presidency with Trump in office, with Republicans in control of Congress, he made his own legacy extremely vulnerable, and he needed to pay more attention to his own party during his time in office.
Interesting. What about the Iran nuke deal and the Cuba opening?
I think the Iran nuke deal might actually look better over time than many people think. It, even though is dealing with a country and a government that many people are clearly not happy about and worried about, it might be an opening to actually curb the threat that that country poses, and it might be harder to undo than President Trump thought.
All right, last 45 seconds. I thought he could do a Nixon in China restructuring the entitlement deal. He walked away from Simpson-Bowles.
He walked away from Simpson-Bowles, but by that time, I think he was pretty nervous as a negotiator about where the Republicans were going. And it would have cost a lot of political capital for the Democrats to go toward entitlement reform. And I think it wasn't simply him. I think that's a case where the political dynamics of Capitol Hill killed the deal as much as President Obama.
Listen to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the BizTalk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country. Go to biztalkradio.com, find the station nearest you, listen to the stream, access our archive of podcasts. We'll be right back with segment two with Julian Zelizer.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now, and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-569-3414. That's 800-569-3414. Again, 800-569-3414.
Reason number 12 why you should own a ThermoSpa's hot tub? They require no attachment to your home's plumbing. Thanks to the ThermoSpa's unique built-in thermofiltration system that filters the water an incredible 144 times a day, you simply fill it with a garden hose and your water stays crystal clear with very little maintenance. Call to receive a free DVD and brochure and find out how you can own a ThermoSpa's hot tub for only a few dollars a day. Right now, they're offering 0% APR financing with approved credit and a $1,000 savings coupon, including free delivery, free chemicals, and a cash discount. And with models starting at $4,995, there will never be a better time to own a ThermoSpa's hot tub. So call now and ask about this limited time offer. Call ThermoSpa's today at 800-956-7183 for your free DVD and brochure. That's 800-956-7183. ThermoSpa's, hot tubs designed to improve your life. Call 800-956-7183 today to take advantage of 0% APR financing.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home, and you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-670-2142. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-670-2142.
800-670-2142. That's 800-670-2142.
Got an old car? You can donate it, whether it's running or not, to the United Breast Cancer Foundation and save a life. They'll even come and pick it up for free. The United Breast Cancer Foundation has saved hundreds of women's lives through their free or low-cost breast screen exams. But now they need your help. The United Breast Cancer Foundation wants to save more lives through early detection by offering women free or low-cost breast screening exams. And donating your old car, SUV, or truck, whether it's running or not, helps pay for them. Plus, you get a charitable tax deduction. Help the United Breast Cancer Foundation save lives by donating your old car, SUV, or truck. Call now for free pickup. 800-245-0473. 800-245-0473. 800-245-0473. Call right now. That number again is 800-245-0473.
Biz Talk Radio.
Back with Princeton presidential historian Julian Zelizer. We're going to talk about the domestic side, but I want to do first talk about two other things. The way he handled the Middle East fascinated me because George Bush was impulsive, gut, messianic, and this guy was rational, thought about it incredibly deeply, took all this time, and I think he ended up leaving it more screwed up than Bush had.
Well, I think there is a case to be made. He clearly had a different approach to the region, and this is a place where he was hoping that restraint in some ways would be a better solution. But what he saw was just how messed up the situation was. And in Syria, it was as if every move, for example, that he made was the wrong move. And he saw a total collapse there of the situation. And with Iraq and Afghanistan, he inherited terrible situations. He did try to ultimately withdraw U.S. involvement, but those areas were so fragile, they are in pretty bad state. And so withdrawing wasn't necessarily improving the situation. And obviously with Israel, for example, the trajectory before him and after him continues to be toward more confrontation. So I think that's one area of policy where right off the bat there is the most criticism and most questioning of the steps that he made.
On African Americans now, it doesn't appear that he was driven to make that a huge focus, a lift up. And I think part of it is you and your folks say that he was so policy pragmatically focused. But do you think he did enough, even symbolically, for African Americans?
I think he probably could have done more. I mean, the two areas he did do more than people realize, one was through the Department of Justice. And there's a chapter that looks at Eric Holder, as we discussed. That's pretty convincing that behind the scenes, quietly, the president was implementing pretty serious changes in response to the criticism of how our criminal justice system worked with relationship to race. And by the end of his presidency, by the final couple years, he was making more public speeches that were pretty bold about the way, for example, that the prison system really disproportionately affected African Americans. But he was always a bit hesitant. He was always worried that as the first African-American president politically, he had to restrain himself. And I think that will be something people talk about, the criticism of the Black Lives Matter movement, for example, that he needed to do more. He needed to be bolder because small steps were not enough given the kind of racial problems we still face as a nation.
I looked, Bill Clinton, his presidency got off to a slow start when he focused on health care, say, rather than welfare reform. Trump, health care rather than infrastructure. And Obama was the same thing. It seemed to me that if he'd focused totally on jobs, and did health care in a second term or later, that he might have got more done, less gridlock?
Perhaps. I mean, I do think it's fair to speculate, and many people do. Timing and sequence matters a lot in politics. And so the issues that presidents pick and the timing that they use to pick them matters. And so there is a criticism out there that by taking health care on so early, such a controversial issue, and with a plan that really was never going to satisfy that many people politically, that, you know, he missed an opportunity to really bolster his support through a bolder attack on the nature and problems of the economy, including something like infrastructure. That said, you know, when he pushes for his stimulus package at this terrible time in the economy, mm-hmm. he still doesn't really get Republican support. He only gets a handful of Republican votes. So I'm not clear that he would have been able to really transform that opposition that he faced on Capitol Hill. I think it was cooked. I think it was going to be there whatever the timing was.
They tried to delegitimize him, his presidency, from the start. Do you think is the birther movement out and out racist?
I think a lot of it is. I think I'm always hesitant to ascribe why people are doing things or why they believe in certain political issues like the birther movement. That said, this effort to use spurious information to question the legitimacy of the first African-American can't be disentangled from race. And there were many people who were involved in that movement in generating interest in it who had a bad record on racial politics. So I wouldn't characterize everyone who was following that or who was reading that as being driven primarily by racist concerns, but there was still a lot of racism involved in how people questioned this presidency.
Okay, let's turn a little bit to the too big to fail, the collapse of Wall Street, Dodd-Frank. And you mentioned a couple of things about Eric Holder, but one thing that would appear to me to be a negative was this focus only on deferred prosecution, not holding these guys accountable, no one going to jail. The second part, TARP really saved the banks. HAMP was supposed to save, allow people to restructure mortgages. But one was huge and one was very small.
Yeah, and the president got a lot of criticism about that, both from the left and the right, that some of the authors look at. And that's a moment, and that's an issue where some of the historians believe that there was more opportunity there for the president to go bolder, both mm-hmm. in helping homeowners, for example, and not just the banks, and being more aggressive in prosecuting people who were involved in the malfeasance that led to this total collapse of our financial system. And he didn't. And this was President Obama worrying about going too far, worrying about being seen as a president who was too far to the left, but maybe missing a real political opportunity because the outrage was so broad when he took office that there clearly, as you look back, was room to do much more on financial issues. He would say that was as much as I was going to be able to do without a severe backlash. You know, about big government.
It's interesting. I always thought that that the mortgage reduction offering was not rolled out the way it should be because Geithner, the Treasury guy, knew that they would have to write down mortgages, which would reduce the bank capital ratios, which would work against trying to save them. Unfortunately, individuals kind of got screwed. Climate change now, that was a core interest, right? Where do you think that ends up with Trump pulling out of the Paris Accord and cap and trade not going anywhere?
Yeah, well, that's an area where the president made much of his progress. This is under the ephemeral category, using executive power. When he realized that there wasn't going to be any path in Congress toward cap-and-trade legislation and the Senate doesn't allow it to move forward, he just goes on a path of using executive power to do whatever he can to curb carbon emissions. And he does a lot. I mean, it becomes a focus of his second term. But the thing with executive power is it's contingent on who follows you. And that's a case where because of how the politics unfolded right now, President Trump is systematically taking all of that apart. So it's not that the president didn't try. It's not that President Obama didn't do a lot. But the way in which he did it left his legacy vulnerable. And right now, a lot of that is going by the wayside, including Paris, including all the emissions controls.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell from our flagship stations, WGCH, Greenwich, WYBC, Yale Radio. We'll talk foreign policy in third segment.
BizTalk News wants to feature your business as part of our Discovery feature, which highlights businesses that are not yet known nationally, but offer products or services that benefit BizTV viewers. Available in over 40 markets on broadcast TV and online via BizTVClub.com. BizTV wants to help get the word out about your business. If you're interested in having your business featured on a future episode of BizTalk Discovery, email us at discovery@biztv.com.
There's no question you need omega-3s, but which form should you take? Fish oil or krill oil? Scientists have debated this for years. Luckily, there's a new solution to satisfy everyone. It's called Krill Omega 50 Plus. It combines ultra-pure fish oil and joint-soothing krill oil together in just one tiny pill. It's so powerful, it can promote the health of your heart and your arteries. And if that wasn't enough, it can also boost your joint comfort in just days. We're so sure Krill Omega 50 Plus will work for you, we'll even send you a free bottle to put to the test. The debate is over. It's not fish oil or krill oil. It's both. And now it's free. Just pay $4.95 for shipping and claim your free bottle. Call now.
800-834-4690. 800-834-4690. That's 800-834-4690.
Attention all authors. Page Publishing is looking for authors. Have you written a book and want to get it published? Page Publishing will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, Apple iTunes, and other outlets. They handle all aspects of the publishing process for you. Printing, cover art, publicity, copyright, and editing. Call 800-557-6095 now for your free author submission kit. That's 800-557-6095 for your free author submission kit. Again, call 800-557-6095.
This is an urgent health notice for all residents suffering from back, neck, knee, and wrist pain. You may qualify for a pain-relieving brace at little or no cost to you, but the deadline is fast approaching. Simply call the Health Alert Hotline now.
You heard right. You may qualify for a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace. These items may even be covered by Medicare or your private insurance. The Health Alert Hotline is your brace company. These specialized braces have been tested for pain relief. Call us toll-free right now to determine your eligibility and to learn how to use your private insurance or Medicare to minimize your out-of-pocket cost. Don't wait. If the deadline passes, you may lose your opportunity to get a pain-relieving back, neck, knee, or wrist brace at little or no cost to you.
800-306-1760. 800-306-1760. 800-306-1760. That's 800-306-1760.
My computer is so slow. It's making me crazy.
I used to have that problem.
Did you quit using a computer or did you buy a new one?
No, I called Geeks On Site. They made an appointment to visit my home and showed up the same day.
You mean they didn't ask you to bring your computer to a shop? That's what happened when I called a support company.
Geeks On Site can go to your home or business or even repair your computer online. They have 24/7 emergency service.
If you are having problems with your PC or Mac, call Geeks On Site. 1-800-591-1682. Our friendly certified computer repair experts are available 24/7. Call now for a free diagnosis. 1-800-591-1682. Data recovery, virus removal, and maintenance for all laptops, desktops, printers, and networks. That's Geeks On Site for friendly, certified computer repair experts available 24/7 over the phone or in your home or business. Just call 1-800-591-1682. That's 1-800-591-1682. 1-800-591-1682.
Attention! Are you moving soon and don't know who to turn to? If you are moving or planning to move long distance or across the country, Moving APT is offering up to a 20% discount for radio callers this month. Let us handle and remove all the pain and stress in a long-distance move. Let Moving APT help you with your all-inclusive move, including packaging services, help with washers and dryers, mounted TVs, bed frames, and more. We can include packing and unpacking services or ask for boxes, tape, bubble wrap, or labels. We also disassemble and reassemble appliances and TVs at your new home. Moving is difficult and stressful, so call Moving APT today to find the most professional movers to support you. If you are looking for a low-cost quote to move long distance or across the country, call us now. Call 800-716-0362. 800-716-0362. Get a guaranteed quote with up to 20% off. 800-716-0362.
Biz Talk Radio.
Back with Julian Zelizer. The book is The Presidency of Barack Obama, A First Historical Assessment. By the way, it's very serious, a very serious and detailed work. I want to go back to the Middle East now in a little bit more detail. Two things. The announcing we're going to leave, does that open a vacuum for ISIS and the Syrian red line? Everybody seems to think cost a lot of U.S. credibility.
Yeah, this is even the essay that's probably, overall it's very positive about his foreign policy. Mm-hmm. Does kind of come down on the side of exactly what you said, that by being too clear about non-intervention, the same approach of restraint, which in other parts of the world was pretty effective and sent a good signal about kind of where the U.S. was going, it didn't really work there. And the kind of chaos which had already unfolded before he took office and the kinds of forces, terrorist forces like ISIS that were taking form as a result of what happened in that area during the Bush presidency, that non-restraint didn't really work. And I think our author, Jeremy Suri, argues it wasn't effective at containing the problem that was getting bigger.
The book makes a good case about how he subtly and over time wants to end the Bush doctrine because endless war against tyranny would have been literally endless. I have a hard time getting my arms around, was there an Obama doctrine and architecture, or was everything looked at piecemeal? Another thing that bothered me was I thought with his brain power and detachment, he would come up for what's the definition of a win in Iraq and Afghanistan. I still don't really know what that is.
That's a fair assessment, and my sense from the administration is that his main goal was to reestablish the notion both that there was this liberal international order of alliances between Western powers and that we would work through these kinds of institutions to achieve our goals, and that war would be secondary to diplomacy in trying to achieve some of our goals. That's not that satisfying as a doctrine. I think as a nation we often want a doctrine that's bolder, that's more aggressive and assertive, and that has a clear vision of what the goal is, as opposed to, acting with more restraint. But I do think that was his doctrine. Part of his doctrine was a response to what we might think of as the Bush doctrine, rather than a new vision of where the U.S. should go. I think he was trying to clean things up and fix things, and that's why that doctrine is so murky.
Now, this, I did not realize there was a thing called Terror Tuesdays where he was actually, right hands-on picking out targets. Talk about the targeted drone attack strategy, and he was pretty aggressive on that. I mean, that's assassinating folks.
Oh, absolutely. This is there's a chapter by Catherine Olmsted, who's a historian out in California, and she starts with these Terror Tuesdays, which is kind of an amazing story where, here he is basically hand-picking who is going to be the target. She says they're almost like baseball cards as he's looking at who's going to be assassinated. And she shows just how pervasive these drone strikes were. She is arguing in her essay that in this part of counterterrorism, he doesn't overturn what President Bush did. He actually both keeps it in place and he accelerates counterterrorism programs with these pretty devastating drone attacks. And so he ends up giving bipartisan legitimacy to how the war on terrorism had been conducted under Bush rather than overturning it. And those Terror Tuesdays are just a great example of just how far he was going.
Trump, reversing the military's ascendancy, going after our own alliances, taking down TPP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. These things seem kind of scary in terms of the global posture for this country.
The alliances that President Obama was so committed to preserving have been part of American foreign policy since World War II, and they've been very effective in many cases at protecting us. They're not they haven't been seen as a source of weakness, just the opposite. And President Trump is moving very quickly to go in the opposite direction. And we might be lucky in that there's no short-term cost to this. But I think over the long term, if these institutions really go away or severely weakened, it will put us as a nation in a more vulnerable position. And I think this is a case where looking back long term at the history since the Cold War is really important, understanding why we are in these alliances that are not always satisfying, but serve a very important purpose of containing threats.
Russia now, what was the reset all about? Was that a failure? And what about the rest of the relationship?
Yeah, the relationship with Russia certainly does not go well. I think he, like many of our presidents, is constantly seeking this reset and finding that under Putin, it's not going to happen. It's a little like, you know, his relationship with the Republicans in Congress, and that there's this hope
and change,
something better, and it doesn't happen. And by the end of his presidency, he's really stumbling, President Obama, and trying to figure out how to deal with this. And it's haphazard. It's not well thought out. And obviously, when the information about election interference comes out, he does take steps to stop it. And he has his intelligence agencies working on it. He has the sanctions. But in some ways, he was still restrained, and it wasn't enough. And we see that by 2016, we are certainly now in one of the worst moments since the Cold War in U.S.-Russia relations.
Do you think that he should have been bolder on the election hacking at the time, or would have been perceived as just too political?
I think he should have been bolder. Yeah. I think the more I learn from the historians about what the administration knew, the more puzzling or troubling some of the checks he put on himself were. I think it was a miscalculation. I understand what he was doing and why he was so worried about how it would look. But it was in some ways a true national security crisis unfolding, and I think there was room to be much bolder.
Almost an act of war. You see a consistent theme throughout this, by the way, that he's risk-averse. He's just a step below the bold step all the time.
That's absolutely true. I mean, ironically, in policy, he is a little more risk. He's more willing to take some risks, and he was willing to go bold on some policies. But a lot of him is either politically or diplomatically worried about going too far. That's always front and center in his mind, more, I think, than it needed to be, especially in that first year when he had all the capital in the world. There's a fair argument that he should have pushed harder. It wasn't as if Republicans had many resources to stop him, and that he should have used that bully pulpit more aggressively to build support and put Republicans on the defense and foreign adversaries on the defense about what he was going to do. But that is who he is, and I think it would be very hard to undo that part of his character.
You know, what's interesting to me is he has tremendous charisma, but it's almost like he had a disdain for politics and didn't want to give it full bloom.
I think that's true. I think the part of politics that really didn't interest him as much, to the frustration of his own party, was party building. That ultimately the president is the leader of the nation, but also the leader of his own party. And part of what we see with all presidents, Republicans and Democrats, who are very successful, is they put energy into that. And they make sure that when they leave, their party's in better shape than it would be without them. And presidents like FDR do that, and the results are that they have a coalition which is going to be there to defend the programs when they're gone. And many congressional Democrats were frustrated in the second term that President Obama wasn't doing that. He wasn't helping with campaigns. He wasn't helping them on Capitol Hill. And as a result, they were really struggling as a party. And I think this is a big, big story that my guess is he himself is aware of.
Interesting. I think the book calls it Global Zero. He really was committed to ridding the earth of nukes, right?
He was. Unfortunately, I don't think we're moving in that direction. But he believed in nuclear abolition very much. And he, like many presidents, you know, since Reagan, really was hoping that the end of the Cold War would create this possibility. But I don't think foreign policy is moving in the direction. In some ways, it's getting more frightening because it's no longer controlled by, you know, a cluster of superpowers. But these nuclear weapons are now accessible to less controllable networks of terrorists and rogue states.
on the Iran deal, should that was separated from their behavior, which is trying to destabilize states like Syria in particular. Is that all right?
Yeah, I do think there was support to do that. And I think there was an argument to be made that you needed to separate the behavior of the regime from an opportunity to try to curb the nuclear threat, which is what this was about. This wasn't handing them some benefit for what they were doing. It was just the opposite. It was to try to create some inspection system and some interaction so we could make sure they didn't become a bigger danger. That's why you had a significant number of hawks who supported this and thought this is our only alternative. And this is a tradition of realpolitik that both parties have engaged in. You know, we wouldn't have had the end of the Cold War if we thought that you couldn't engage with countries whose behavior was not acceptable.
Final segment coming up, the Obama legacy.
I live alone and rarely have visitors. So when I slipped and fell in the kitchen last month and couldn't get to a phone, I knew I was in trouble.
Help!
I could barely move.
Help!
I tried calling for help, but no one could hear me. As I lay there, I couldn't help but think of my kids and grandkids having to go on without me. I was terrified. It took 8 hours for my neighbor to find me. It could have been the end of me. That's when I knew I needed Life Alert. With just one press of this button, I'm connected to the Life Alert Center, where I can get the help I need, even when I cannot reach a phone. With Life Alert, I'm never alone.
Call 1-800-414-1958 for your free Life Alert brochure. That's 1-800-414-1958. 1-800-414-1958. Call for your free Life Alert brochure today at 1-800-414-1958.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right. General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with CNN political analyst Julian Zelizer. The book puts together all the different pieces of looking at him. Do you have a holistic assessment of his legacy and where he might rank?
I don't. And I guess part of the premise of the book is I'm not a big ranker. In fact, I started these books because that always comes up, and I don't look at it that way. What I like to do is try to understand where do they fit in the long trajectory of history and all the big issues that they deal with, from immigration to foreign policy. And the reality is presidents are re-ranked all the time. People see them differently. We change depending on what's going on. So there's never a firm ranking or a firm legacy. So, again, the premise of the book is this is an unfolding conversation, and this is just the beginning, and I think that's the best way to look at it.
Would you say he's one of the most promising and brilliant presidents? And if so, did he get 70% of the way there?
Yeah, I think he's incredibly intelligent, incredibly perceptive, and incredibly thoughtful. And whether you didn't like him or like him, I think there should be room to see that. And I think he did bring that to the presidency. And while you normally wouldn't like focus on that as a key part of a presidency, you'd hope every president is like that. That's a time that now, looking back in the middle of our current presidency, I think that's more of an accomplishment than we realized, especially in our current political environment.
If we'd married his policy legacy to more of an LBJ persona, would greatness have been within reach?
I think it could have been. I think if he had fought harder to protect and strengthen Democrats against the Republicans and done more political work, kind you saw with LBJ or FDR or even Ronald Reagan, I think the Democrats could have been in stronger shape when he left, and that would have changed the calculus. We might have had a Democratic president, and that would have made all the difference in the world. All of this executive action that he took on issues like the climate would still be in place, and then you'd be talking legacy rather than dismantlement.
The sad thing about that is his intentions were really honorable, I think, to try to bring the Republicans and Democrats together. And I guess it's naive, but interesting. We talked about his risk aversion. Do you think that Trump, who's an entrepreneur, has a higher chance to be a transformational president than Obama?
Well, I think you need to. It could be. I do think, though, if you take a lot of risks, you have to have some kind of plan about why you're taking those risks. It's not simply about doing things on the spur of the moment and just what's in your mind. I'm not sure the administration has that either. And I think his primary focus right now is taking apart what Obama did rather than putting something new together. So I'm not persuaded yet that the risk-taking from the current president is going to produce big results.
What was his urban vision, and do you give him credit for the race to the top supporting charter schools, things like that on the education side?
It's kind of small incremental politics, and that's what the author Tom Segura argues, that things like the promised neighborhoods and his efforts to expand enterprise zone type activities were important, but they were very incremental given the scale of the problems many cities faced. And that's not an area where I think President Obama's legacy will be one of transformation. And I think many of those will prove to be pretty fragile and not bold enough to really deal with the urban issues we still face.
On immigration, the DREAM Act, DACA, a grand bargain was elusive here as well as with Simpson Bowles on that side. How do you assess him on immigration?
Yeah, he did try. I do think he, like George W. Bush, was committed to some kind of bold immigration package. He wanted to liberalize parts of the policy and create a path to citizenship, and he was willing to ramp up deportation to do that dramatically. But in the end, that's a case where the direction of the Republican Party wasn't going where he was going to need it to go to get a deal. And so he ended up primarily with executive orders like DACA, and those are being pulled apart unless the courts can save them. So that's a case of frustration, and I don't think that's all about him. I do think there he really tried the administration to get a deal, but we don't have a political moment right now where there's going to be a deal on immigration.
Interesting. Does character matter anymore?
I don't think it matters as much as we hope. I think, the political system went low, even though some people aim high. But that's the reality right now. We should get back to a place where character matters, and we should get back to a place where honor matters in politics. I do think it's relevant, but I think we have to understand some of the dysfunctions of our political system, our media system right now. And it's all right in front of us. And so it's not that it doesn't matter, but we can't perpetually expect that that's going to lift us up to our better angels.
Are you optimistic that we will get back to that?
I don't know. It's going to take a lot. We won't get back to it naturally. It won't be one leader who all of a sudden restores civility and function in politics. It's going to take real reform of our institutions. That's the only way to get back to where we hope we should be.
Okay, let's finish up. What do you see his post-presidential legacy becoming?
I think right now it's really in danger. I think a lot of it can be, of the policies can be gone. What does he do? I don't know. I mean, I think there's room for him to re-enter into our public discussions, both on issues like gerrymandering and race, and also even as a voice in politics. I think given the situation we face, we need an aggressive and active post-presidency. We need more Jimmy Carter-like activity on foreign policy from him on domestic policy. And I think he can't really be quiet. He's young, he's ambitious, and he's full of energy. So I think it would serve him best to get back into public life.
I don't know if you know him well or whatever. How does he feel about how things are, both for what he did and where they are now?
I don't know him. I've never met him, but just reading the interviews he's done post-presidency, he is still optimistic and still has that demeanor, but he's made many statements and had many interviews where he acknowledges he didn't totally acknowledge how bad the political situation had become. And he said once to the New Yorker right after his presidency, when asked how did we get to this place in the election, he said we should have seen this coming. And he goes, it wasn't new. It's been brewing for many decades. So I think there's a part of him that understands that. And I'm sure he's very concerned about what he's seen in the White House.
Fascinating book, and it takes a lot of guts, I think, to get out there and take a shot at this in this fluid environment. Thanks to Julian Zelizer. The book is The Presidency of Barack Obama, First Historical Assessment. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Go to iTunes and get our archives. You can go to YouTube, search Biz Talk with Jim Campbell or Park City Productions 06604, and you can see get all of our YouTube shows. Our next show from Council on Foreign Relations, Dr. Alyssa Ayers, is going to talk about the rise of India. Thanks to Julian Zelizer again. Thanks to our national audience for listening. See everybody next Sunday on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.